same for that.
Yeah, we're going to be insane.
Yeah.
Do you
remember
a beach?
I feel like I remember that Peter a lot.
There may be some other way around, I guess.
All right. You're listening to Soft Focus. And today we're going to be doing our sort of year-end awards in lieu of the Oscars, since they will not honor very many particularly good movies, especially this year. I feel like it's a really bad batch. But before we dive into all of that, let's introduce you to everyone. Sam, how are your grandparents?
They're doing great. I have a little bit of an email.
Oh my God,
about The Big Short, because we talked about The
Big
Short,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I thought maybe it's just a tiny little bit. But they said, we went to see The Big Short recently and found it interesting and surprising. We were surprised at Brad Pitt's smaller role and Steve Carell's acting ability. Anyway, hope all is well. I noticed that the temperature in Milford about 5 hours ago was only 5 degrees in here. I was complaining yesterday that it was cool at 64 degrees here. So anyway,
aww.
So there's a little thing about them. They
nice.
Also went to see Joy and The Revenant, but they haven't really talked to me
yeah.
about them yet. So I'll have to, next time, I have to give you their little skinny
yeah.
on Joy and The Revenant.
Dispatch from Key West. Or
yeah, exactly. They're about 3 hours away from Key West.
Nice.
Did they actually type that in all caps?
They typed this one in all caps because it was about Valentine's Day. And so the whole thing was in huge capital letters and they're all
oh
red.
My God.
And they had like hearts on either side. It was very cute.
Wow, that's
normally
cute.
They type in a normal grammatical.
Okay.
We have a special guest today.
Yeah.
Miss Madeline.
Oh God.
And she'll tell us a little something about, or you can say the line.
Yeah, wow, you really fucked that up. So Maddie, what's the skinny on Emily Dickinson?
Hey guys, so you guys probably already read my tweet about this, but I tweeted one of my favorite poems the other day. It goes like this. I hide myself within my flower that fading from your vase, you unsuspecting feel for me almost a loneliness. And there's lots of little dashes in there, and there's some awesome ambiguities that you can't hear while I'm just saying it, so you should look it up. And
what's
I
the name of that poem?
Yeah, what's the name of it?
She
doesn't
name
her
poems. Oh, Emily.
They're numbered.
What's that number on that one? 82?
Probably in the hundreds. It's like 140 something.
82?
I don't know. I was trying to think of the number.
That's close. 82, it's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
It is an early poem.
But it's number one in your heart. Is that what?
It's probably number one. It
all
really
right.
is.
82-1.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're very glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
A special treat for a special episode.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Theodore. The most important question. Have you seen any good YouTube videos lately?
No, the internet is doomed.
It's what? Fucked. Oh my gosh.
I want to like change my category to Vine. there's been an influx of great Vines lately.
Oh my gosh.
And one I just watched is someone watching an episode of The Magic School Bus, and that nerdy kid with the red hair. They're like on the moon or something, and he takes off his helmet, and he has glasses, and his whole head freezes, and like his glasses, and the guy in the video goes like, "Yo!" He's like, "He just died!" And they're like, yeah, it's so funny.
Does that have a name? Can you search for Vines? I don't know how to do that.
I don't know,
You have to like blow smoke signals from your vape pen at your phone.
Yeah. There's also this, that's really good. There's also this vine of this guy being like, "Yo, doggy, new vape," and then he shows like the head of the vape, and then he goes down a little bit, and it's like it's obviously like the whatever it's called of a computer, like a heart. I don't know what it's called. The
keyboard.
No, it's the Mac. Macs don't have them. I can't remember the name of it. They're like these big things you put the discs in.
Disk drive.
Oh, like a desktop
shit.
Component.
Drive.
Yeah, what is that component?
It's
called?
A computer. You have like the computer and then you have the monitor.
The tower?
Right?
Yeah, the tower. I was trying to think
of
like that word.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, he like moves down to the tower and he's like, "Yo, check out my vape. Check out this head." He's like, "Got the fucking Cloud Blower 2000. That just looks like this giant." Okay. Yeah. Well, fuck me. Fuck Vine.
I'm sure it's funny.
This is your brain on Vine.
Fuck all of you, Derek.
No, I like it. I want to see it. Really
How's your basketball team?
Well, I'm sad to say that Marc Gasol, probably my second or third best player at this point, broke his foot. So I'm now down.
Wait, didn't somebody injure themselves the last time we spoke?
Yeah, Eric Bledsoe, I think he tore his ACL. No, he didn't tear his ACL. He did something. He had a meniscus tear, maybe. I don't know. So, yeah, I'm down two of my best four players. Doesn't matter. I'm still in second place. I'm only one game behind the first place guy. I'm still going to kick everyone's butt because that's just how good I am.
You should really cut in from last time where Derek said, there's no way that I'm ever going to get out of first place. Number one. By the end of the season,
I'm just going to be like, yeah, I'm in sixth. Holding strong.
No.
Well,
can I say one thing?
I'm not too worried about it.
Oh, no, you go ahead more about your thing. I'm sorry.
That's it.
Has there been like a death of a player during like a season?
That's
like,
interesting. There was this really great player named Drazen Petrovic, and probably Petrovic was how you'd pronounce that. Anyways, he was like the, I'm going to forget his nationality. I think he was Serbian or Yugoslavian. And he died in a plane crash like in the middle of the season, and he was having like a great year. Everyone was like, is he gonna be as good as Michael Jordan? There's a really good ESPN 30 for 30 documentary about it, actually. It's called Once Brothers, and it's about this guy and I believe Vlade Divac,
mm-hmm.
who was a player in the NBA for a long time, and they were from, I'm going to betray my lack of knowledge of, like, international history, but they were from, like, Yugoslavia and Serbia? Those the two that were, like, at odds for a long time? Mm-hmm. Anyways, they, like, came up playing basketball together, but then, like, international tension sort of, like, created tension in their personal relationships, mm-hmm. and they were both these dudes who were, like, over from Europe trying to make it in the NBA, mm-hmm. and then tragic death. It's a really good documentary.
It's called
Once Brothers. I'm pretty sure.
That reminds me of, what's the documentary that maybe was this year or maybe last year about the hockey players from Russia?
Red Army?
Yeah, that was really good. I'm just
that
remembering
was good.
That now.
Yeah. It was like 72 minutes long or something. It should have been a little bit longer, but
yeah, it was.
I did really like it. It was very informative.
That was this year, right?
Yeah, it was this year.
And that's the end of the podcast right there.
No!
Did you find it?
Yeah, it is called Once Brothers, and they were from Yugoslavia.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, check it out. I obviously didn't describe it very well, but it's quite good. Cool. So,
wait, can I say one thing?
No.
A great filmmaker died last night.
Oh yeah.
Andrzej Sapkowski.
Yeah.
Who did Possession and The Devil and On the Silver Globe and My Nights Are Better Than Your Days, or More Beautiful Than Your Days rather, and Public Woman. They're all amazing. He's such a great filmmaker. Possession is one of the best movies of all time, and everybody has to see Possession.
It's deemed as like a classic.
Yeah, but it's like a under where you can't even find it anywhere. It's very hard to find. I had to buy it for like $45, but everybody should see Possession, and the poor guy died yesterday. But that's that. Maybe we can talk about something else, I suppose.
Rest in peace. Okay, so on that happy note,
sorry.
We decided we wanted to give out some awards or just talk about some movies in a sort of summary way, because I think 2015 was quite a good year for movies.
Mm-hmm.
But the Oscars are coming up. This will probably come out a few days before the Oscars. And I don't think they do a particularly good job of highlighting what's good about movies over the course of a year.
The only thing the Oscars do is give a reason for people to talk about Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, did do a great job of that.
Yeah, everyone talks about him because it was one of them.
I wonder if he'll be vaping
there. That's
their
real plan. I hope he's vaping there. It's got the fucking cloud blower.
He'll pull it out if he doesn't win.
Yeah.
He'll just be vaping very
He'll just
bad.
Be, like, be like, oh well, like, I'm going to blow the biggest cloud ever. And walks out.
There's no way he's not winning, I don't think.
No,
I
he's
would love
win.
To see like the Las Vegas odds of him winning.
He's
bet they're
win.
Insane.
Yeah. But we decided to give out some awards of our own. The categories that we're going to be talking about today are Best Bit Player, Best Popcorn Movie, Most Overrated Movie, Most Underrated, Best World Building in a Movie, the Matthew McConaughey's MVP of the Year Award, and finally we'll just be crowning a Best Overall Movie. Although crowning isn't really accurate. We're just kind of going to talk about some movies that we think did these things well, and then each of us will sort of give you our own pick.
Yeah. Back and forth.
Yeah, so hopefully it'll be a good time. Let's get it started. Yeah.
Okay.
So next, we're going to talk about the best popcorn movies.
Yeah.
So we decided to split this out, make it its own category, rather than, since we're all kind of snobs, rather than making these movies compete with the highbrow.
Oh my good lord.
Garbage. Does someone else want to introduce them?
I feel
like I've been talking a lot.
I can do it. Here, can you scooch that over a tiny bit?
Mad Max.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Mad Max, I think, should be the first one, but that's just my opinion. And then Star Wars The Force Awakens, Chappie, Jurassic World, Trainwreck, Spectre, Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Holy shit.
And The Revenant. I think if I had to pick, or if I had to talk about these... Okay, what makes a popcorn movie? I suppose that needs to be like the very basis of comparison between all of these films. And I feel like it's something that's exciting and dynamic. It captures your attention and you just, I don't know, it's something that, you know what I mean, kind of consumes you.
It's loud enough where you can eat popcorn loudly in the movie theater.
Ooh, yeah, that's
sure.
Good. That's good.
That's good. What do you think?
You are actually in a movie theater where people have purchased popcorn.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I find myself going to movies that are not popcorn movies, and then no one has anything.
No.
Everyone just has their little
Sorgento cheeses.
Yeah.
I guess sometimes I think about going to a movie, and I'll just be like, oh, yeah, this movie's going to be really good. I can't wait to, like, go by myself in, like, the middle of the day on, like, a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And it'll just be, like, me and one other person who will not make any noise.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can
yeah.
just, like, appreciate the film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then there's other movies that I'm, like...
Friday night. Being a huge...
Yeah, like, I'm gonna be disappointed if I walk into this theater and there's not, like, a bunch of people. Like,
yeah.
I just want to be part of some weird communal thing.
Right.
Yeah.
The best popcorn movie is something that is, like, a collective... There's something collective about it, where it's a big group of people, everybody's appreciating it in the same way, and for a moment, everybody feels the same.
Which is how I saw The Revenant. It was a sold-out theater.
And did everyone feel the same way?
I don't know, but in front of me there's two very large men, and next to me was about an 8-year-old girl.
Oh!
They're all eating popcorn, watching people get their scalp.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like an 8-year-old girl should...
And, yeah, like it was gross.
I guess, just by the very nature of our definition, some of these don't entirely fit. I don't think everybody was feeling the same way about Trainwreck.
Or
The Revenant, or Chappie, or Spectre.
Yeah, Chappie's too divisive.
I think
Trainwreck count. I think...
No, I think it's a little too... It's too, like, much for, like, younger people.
When
I think that, like, you should... I think you're right. Like, it should be, like, 8-year-olds and, like, 80-year-olds.
But it's still made for a mass audience.
Yeah.
I think that's what we were trying to get at.
Yeah, when I was watching Trainwreck, I, like, wish I had food because I was... so bored.
Because you need to stimulate yourself.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I get it. He's gay. Oh, he sounds like he's gay. That's funny. And then I wish I had popcorn.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. To drown out the sound of the movie.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know what I would pick here. I think I might pick Star Wars.
I was going to say Star Wars, too.
Or, I mean, Mad Max is such a great movie, and I feel like every single person that has seen it, including my grandparents and my younger sisters and my parents, every single person that I've talked to, like... in a movie theater, everybody seems to love Mad Max.
Yeah.
You're, like, blown away by it. But I feel like there's something exciting about Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
when I
yeah.
saw it for the first time, people were, like, gasping when when it, like, just
it
popped
was so
up.
Exciting.
People were just,
yeah.
like, blown away, even
yeah.
by just, like, that one frame. And it,
yeah.
like, held them in this way that I haven't really seen
yeah.
in the similar way. Do you know what I mean? It was, like, what the prequel should have been, where everybody's so excited, there's so much goodwill, and then it, like, comes forward in this beautiful way. And everyone's just like, yeah! That's what it was
and
in the theater.
My experience for it was I actually saw it on opening night.
Oh my gosh.
On Thursday
nice.
Night. So it was
Me too.
Super crowded.
Yeah.
And like everyone was so excited. Like people were in costumes.
Yeah,
there were some costumes. And yeah, I mean, I think that's just like the ideal vibe for me. Like, especially you're sitting in the theater like an hour before it starts because you know you had to get there early, and like it's just a community feeling.
You have to eat shit. Yeah. I feel like Mad Max almost doesn't work in this because it's a popcorn movie, but done so well that it kind of transcends into something else.
Well, that's something I kind of wanted to talk about with The Revenant too. That I
feel like that's in the same.
Well, I almost feel like The Revenant is getting like killed by all these snoots like us who are just like, yeah, the movie's not that good. That, you know, it's becoming very overrated. There's almost like this reaction to the fact that a ton of people are seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But that reaction is coming from people who view the movie not as a popcorn movie, but as like, oh, that's something by this supposed auteur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe like all that these sort of people are lacking, and I'm probably in this group because I tend to think that The Revenant kind of was a miss for me. I mean, it was really good, but it also was sucked.
Yeah.
But it's like, maybe it was just a popcorn movie. Maybe it was just a really good
action movie. I think it was a popcorn action movie because like, while you're watching it, you're like, wow, that sucks. Oh, that sucks too. And you like keep going and it keeps going. And then at the end of the movie, you're like, oh, that was a bunch, that sucked.
Yeah.
And like, that was the whole, it's not like, when I finished the movie, I was just like, yeah, that was a bunch of really crazy looking things that happened, but I don't really like, I didn't gain anything from the movie.
Well,
I guess
that's a good point, because when I was watching it, I was very enthralled. I was like, whoa, this is, I kept thinking like, this is really brutal.
Yeah. I meant that sucks as in like,
No, I understand what you're saying. But then, so my immediate reaction was like, yeah, that was really good. I liked that.
Yeah,
and then as time has gone on, as I think about it more, as I just don't think about
it
at all.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of
it just
stuff
doesn't have staying power.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not, you know, maybe it's just a good action movie.
Yeah, maybe it is. Five bags popcorn, Revenant.
Well, are there any other ones? Chappie probably is too divisive.
I feel like it's between Star Wars and I guess The Revenant, Mad Max, because all the other ones
I would give it to Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Yeah.
Star Wars was the most fun to watch.
Yeah. And I think Star Wars, whenever I hear someone like critique Star Wars, this most recent movie, I mean, it's just like, yeah, I mean, okay, that's even the most that I can possibly agree with you, the fact still remains that like, can you imagine trying to make this movie?
Yeah.
Okay, I have to excite a bunch of 8-year-olds who might not have ever seen any of these movies before. I have to like keep people who have been familiar with the franchise since its inception in the loop. Like, there's just so many demands.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really high degree of difficulty. And normally I feel like we think about something being a high degree of difficulty or something being really ambitious if it's sort of like a niche movie. But in a way, I feel like this movie is extremely ambitious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just the mere project of like trying to resurrect this franchise is so hard.
Because it wasn't thoughtless. Like, I guess Jurassic World is like a good counterexample where I was like, this is 10 times worse than like Jurassic Park. Like, and like people are coming here like expecting it to be, well, I guess people probably didn't expect that much of it. But yeah, just the task of like bringing back a movie in like a really great way, especially considering the history of Star Wars and how like everyone was just disappointed in the early 2000s with like the revival. So yeah, I totally agree that it kind of filled everyone's expectations.
Yeah, and after it was done, I was like, I kind of would like to see that again
now.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, any problems I had with it where I felt like something wasn't that smart, I had to be like, oh yeah, this is like basically for kids,
right?
So I shouldn't be like so worried,
but
about
in a fun, in like a fun way,
yeah.
Not in like a, oh,
but
it's
like,
just for kids, like Minions.
Yeah.
But
it's like 50% for kids.
Sure.
There's like toys for.
It's like if you
kid.
Borrow a shirt from someone because you know you're like on a trip, and then like your clothes get shredded by a wild cougar.
Okay.
And then someone like loans you a shirt, if you were just like, well, this doesn't fit that well,
mm-hmm.
you should be like, oh, this actually fits pretty well, like,
given
the circumstances, like, I'm relatively well clothed.
Yes.
Star Wars is like a cougar shredding your clothes.
Interesting.
If
I had a dime.
So it seems like we all feel pretty good about Star Wars in this category.
Yeah,
for best popcorn movie.
Cool. Next we're gonna go on to something that will surely be more divisive, and that's the most overrated movie of the year.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
gosh. I think it's between two. I can't read,
yeah.
But can
at
I say
all.
What two they are? I can't read at all. I guess we compiled these, so I should remember, but I don't. But I think The Big Short and Anomalisa are the ones that like are really super.
Yeah.
Those are sort of ones that have like prestige buzz.
Is there even...
Yeah.
I haven't heard anybody talking about Anomalisa.
Anomalisa, the Hollywood Reporter, on The Hollywood Reporter.
Okay.
Isn't that what it's called? The Hollywood Reporter has on the cover of their new edition, Anomalisa, and it says, like, the most critically acclaimed film of the year is also the best
I looked up a bunch of reviews,
or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're all, like, unanimously...
Like, it's amazing.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
Is the cover just, like, that part in where he's getting out of the shower and you see his tiny penis?
Yeah, that's the cover just, like, zoomed in on it.
Yeah.
It's very... It's a little alarming.
You had to zoom in.
Yeah. Well, they need
I was watching it. I leaned forward.
Yes. That's the magazine version of clickbait.
Yeah, it is.
What are the other ones?
Yeah, let's go through a few other ones real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Maddie, you didn't like Carol that much.
I did not, no. I thought it was pretty overrated, but I'm willing to discuss.
I think I'm the only one that did not see it.
I it was overrated in the sense that it hyped up my expectations to a degree that it did not fulfill in a way. And in that regard, I suppose it's overrated, but I do have, like, a strong affinity for it. I really appreciate it as a movie.
I appreciate it. It's just, I think why I think it's overrated is, I mean, Derek, you love it. And, like,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people that we know, like just loved it. And, like, I heard nothing really bad about it. And I just, like, I was completely unimpressed. I didn't really enjoy watching it. Like, upon thinking about it, it's like, yeah, that was pretty to watch, and, like, it was a nice story, but, like, it didn't make me feel anything, and I think, like, it's a movie about, it's a love story.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it didn't make me feel anything at all.
That's one of the main criticisms I've heard.
Yeah.
Like, people didn't, like, really believe in the relationship at its core.
Yeah.
Wait, can I say about, that's how I felt about The Danish Girl, kind of.
Yeah,
okay.
I was just
even though
that.
I
was like, the Danish Girl on this list?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like the, is it The Danish Girl on the
yeah,
list?
It is.
Yes.
I do. Can you read off all of them and then I'll talk about The Danish Girl?
Anomalisa, Carol, Star Wars, Big Short, Revenant, Danish Girl.
Okay.
The Danish Girl.
The Danish Girl is, like, great performances, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
The sets are fine, whatever. The costume's fine, whatever. but the...
Actually, no, I would agree with you on the costumes.
Yeah. But I do feel like the relationship at its core did not make me feel anything. Like, I did not tear up at all in Carol. I didn't tear up at all in The Danish Girl. And then, like, I cried twice during Joy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's, like, the expectations that I had for those two movies completely did not follow through at all. I happen to like Carol more than I like The Danish Girl.
The Danish Girl looked like a play that was filmed.
Basically, yeah.
Yes.
Well,
just really
the guy, that guy did Les Mis. That's all he does.
Really? Yeah,
they all look
all
like
the sets look. I was like, this looks like Les Mis.
Yeah.
Like, all of the walls were painted to, like, have, like, columns on them and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. It was,
like
weird.
They used shading to make it look like it was popping up.
Yeah, weird depth of focus,
like,
too.
Yeah.
I don't know why people seem to really like that movie that much.
Do people? Like, how did it do, like,
you know,
but critically? Yeah, I
critically, I think
like
it. I think it's a little bit more mixed than Carol. Carol's, like, unanimously well-regarded by critics. I feel like The Danish Girl is, like, maybe 80% around Tomatoes. Everybody seems to really like it when they come out of the theater. It's been nominated for a lot of things. Carol, at least, is not nominated for much of anything. I feel like, at least in that regard, it's underrated.
Well, Carol and Danish Girl were both nominated for the acting awards, right?
Oh, yeah, and Danish Girl is nominated for Best Picture.
And neither of them are nominated for
That's
Best
true.
Picture.
True, I didn't think about
Wait,
that.
Is Danish Girl nominated for Best
no,
Picture?
No, I don't think so.
To me, well, here's an interesting question. Like, if you had to include one of those two movies in the Best Picture nominees. All right,
Carol.
good. One thing I wanted to say, there's the joke I read on Twitter, and I actually remember who made it. It's Steve Hyden, one of my favorite music writers, another former Grantland alumni. I think he has a book coming out.
Oh,
but anyways,
cool.
He just tweeted, I'm almost certain it was him. He just tweeted, my least favorite genre of movie is starring Eddie Redmayne.
Yes.
And I feel like that's become, like, a really... actually true thing. Like, Eddie Redmayne just does these movies every year where he's like, I'm Eddie Redmayne, this movie is serious business.
If I see him, I'm just like, get the fuck out of here.
Oh my gosh.
I heard someone compare him to Daniel Day-Lewis.
They said
someone passed the poster and was like, Eddie Redmayne, he's like the new Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, that's funny. I heard someone compare Daniel Day-Lewis to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Really?
They're all kind of the same.
So by the transitive property of
method-y acting.
Yeah.
One
thing that I think
oh,
so
ahead.
Like I did this competitive acting stuff in high school.
Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah, you may not know this about me.
I did this for a joke. You were competitively acting?
Yeah, I mean, basically you did these little performances in, like, either by yourself or in small groups.
Okay.
It's not very important, but, like...
Oh, what was it called?
It was called Forensics.
Yes, that's right! Okay,
so
I
this
had
was
a
like,
friend that was
this is,
that.
Like, really important Forensics. To me in high school.
Oh, so you say you're in Forensics and people think you're cooler than you are.
Yeah, because I always thought he was, like, digging up corpses
yeah,
or something.
Okay.
And then he's like, do you want
to... I have a point here.
Oh,
exactly. And the point is that, like, this was really important to me in high school, and I was, like, pretty good at it. Like, I did fairly well at, like, state-level competitions mm-hmm. every year. But, like... as time has passed and it's become like not a central part of my identity and I've gotten further away from it, I realized that like everyone was really overacting all
yeah.
the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone would do these either like try to be wildly funny or what would often be more successful is if you could like be really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But like as a high schooler, you're acting and sort of like picking the material that you're going to be performing and you just look for something that you're just like
yeah.
trying to punch someone in the face with sadness
yeah, yeah.
and like now I think if I go back I'd be like oh sheesh that's not that good like
yeah.
the acting that I'm attracted to now is a lot more understated, is a lot more just present, is based
sure.
on like
mm-hmm.
presence
yeah
not like evoking some catharsis and I feel like Eddie Redmayne is very much this actor who's just like let's do the catharsis like let's
yeah, yeah,
get
yeah.
it
yes.
on let's gear it up and it's like no maybe you just need to like. Like, I feel like Eddie Redmayne could never do a scene that he doesn't get to talk in. He could never do
yeah.
a scene where he just, like, sits in a chair.
Yeah, no, interesting.
Like, I think maybe it was with you that we talked about that scene in The Danish Girl where he first, like, kind of has the dress, like, he's putting on the dress. And
we talked about
on.
That.
Okay.
Because he's just, like, the most overwhelming.
Yeah, and it's just
yeah.
like, oh my god.
Yeah. It's
or
insane.
Even when he's doing the poses for her, like, do you remember that?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
on
yeah.
his head.
Yeah.
He's just being like, why is he doing that with his hand?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's
so
gross.
Like, oh, you're a girl. I get it.
Yeah,
you have
yeah.
to, like, be...
Yeah,
so, like,
it's a little
lie,
but
yeah.
It's strange.
Yeah.
But I still don't think that's the most overrated movie of the year.
We should talk a little bit more about Anomalisa, I think.
Well,
oh, me
yes.
and Maddie really
oh,
hate it.
Oh, my God.
Fuck Anomalisa.
Well, yeah.
You said you liked it.
I liked watching it, but then after I was done and I actually thought about everything that happened, I was like, I don't give a single fuck about anything.
Okay, well, I hated watching it, and then I hated it.
I like how it looks.
I have not changed.
I hated the dream sequence.
I did think it looked okay. Yeah.
Yeah. The dream sequence made me want to kill myself.
Really,
I
thought the dream sequence was interesting because I was like, at least something's happening now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like when he is on like, the guy's like, take the golf cart over here.
Yeah.
yeah.
I was like, what the fuck? Why?
Yeah.
My thought was just like, oh, is it becoming a Charlie Kaufman movie? Like, is some absurd stuff
that's
going on?
I was excited for that, and then it
yeah.
didn't happen.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere.
I was waiting for the moment for it to turn into yeah.
it. Like,
yeah.
I was waiting for, like, someone, like, that look was a real human instead of a puppet to, like,
oh
appear in a movie
God.
Or something.
That
would have like,
been
whoa!
Crazy.
Yeah, but, like, it didn't happen.
I think the problem with the movie is just that the central conceit is so shallow.
Yeah.
Like, yep, this guy, like, uses other people. Yep, this guy... views everyone else as the same, and maybe that's because of his own faults
yeah.
and not the external world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he may or may not
that's
have had
it.
Sex with a puppet.
Yeah.
yeah, pretty
but, and, like, that's kind of an interesting idea. Like, yes, it is true that there are people in the world. Like, I think that,
right.
that there's a hypothetical movie out there that makes that insightful criticism that, like, hey, if you're just, like, full of, like, ennui and, like, boredom,
wait.
Maybe the problem is you and not the world.
You're talking about Eternal Sunshine.
Charlie
Kaufman's
sure.
already explored this. He's normally in the deep end of something where he's bringing together multiple disparate entities and then tying them together in like little ribbons and stuff
yeah.
like that. This movie has just one sole focus
yeah.
and sole purpose, and it's going towards it at such a clip that it just means nothing at all.
It seems
well,
like a better elevator pitch than an actual
yes.
movie.
Yeah,
so
well, yeah, we talked about that. It would be great as a short.
It's like a
30-minute
short. I was going to say, it reaches the point of the whole entire movie within like the first like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
It's very weird. That's jarring.
Yeah.
But I have to say, and I'm going to tie it around to most overrated, and then we can say which one is our least favorite, most overrated, is Anomalisa, critically acclaimed. The public seems to dislike it thoroughly, on almost like a visceral level. Everybody that I've talked to is like,
yeah.
no, I don't know about that. Like, they're like,
I think
upset.
It's divisive. Some people really like it.
People were like laughing
yeah.
at it when I watched it.
Yeah, people laugh at it. People don't like it at all. Whereas The Big Short, critically acclaimed, and also every single audience is like, what a picture.
Yeah, people
now
like
that's
it.
A film.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, in that regard, it's the most overrated in that
And I don't really like normally talking about like overrated kind of things and things like that, but I think it has both, it's grabbing with both hands. Do you know what I mean? It has both the audience and critics.
Yeah.
And it's like a mystery to me. It doesn't make, it's like a magician made the movie or something.
I'm on a similar page.
Yeah.
I would say that like, I liked 25% of The Big Short,
mm-hmm.
and I liked 10% of Anomalisa.
Okay.
So, pretty close.
Would you say, which one's your pick for most overrated?
Big Short is the most overrated.
Not out of those two, out of any of them, sorry.
The Big Short, definitely.
Okay.
I want to throw one more thing out there, kind of as a surprise.
Oh.
Now, a movie can be good and still be overrated.
True, true, true.
Sure.
Like Inception.
Sure.
There you go.
Although, I don't know if Inception's good.
No, fine.
I think one of the most overrated movies of the year.
What's that?
Might be Mad Max.
Well, there's no.
Well, the whole feminism thing. Shove that out the door. It's not actually a feminist movie.
Totally is. They had the vagina monologues woman look over the script. I don't think.
I want to know why you don't think it's feminist, actually.
Because,
but we can do this.
Because the whole movie, I was just sorry. Just quick note: the whole movie, I was waiting for a woman to stand out and be like. Women can be as equal as a man, and not just these objects that like have to run away from shit. And then like it was just like, hey, there's women. They're about to do something. Something might happen, and then Tom Hardy just did everything.
No, I think Tom Hardy's not used.
I don't understand.
Like Tom Hardy's used as like a level for Charlize Theron to shoot somebody in her face. I think Tom Hardy doesn't do as much as he's much like the other Mad Max movies. He's a secondary character in his own film. And I also feel like there's no way that it's overrated because a movie that is crafted over a period of 10 years, nobody wants to see it, nobody wants to buy it, nobody wants to pay for it, and then it comes out and then it's incredible and has multiple layers of intrigue and interest, that cannot be overrated in and of itself, even if it's highly regarded by all people. It makes no sense to call it overrated.
Well,
so I will erase that from the minutes.
I don't understand why you don't think it could possibly be overrated.
Because I think that's like grasping at straws to call it overrated.
Okay. Quickly on the feminism thing. For me, the reason that it's not a feminist movie is because I don't think it's like actively advancing like the project of feminism.
Yeah,
like it holds like the most basically egalitarian viewpoint, which is like women shouldn't be sex slaves, which like yes, I assume all feminists believe that, but I don't think that like the project of feminism for the people who are seeing that movie is like fighting sex trade.
So do you think
I think the project of like I don't think that movie has anything insightful to say about like rape culture. I don't think that movie has anything insightful to say about like pay disparity.
And
like,
well, first off, you're wrong, first off. But secondly, can you believe it? No, there's a thing doesn't have to comment on the very nature of feminism to be feminist. A woman in power in and of herself is a feminist act in a sense. So having a movie that passes the Bechdel test, has all these women in it, has them in subversive roles, that's three times feminist, regardless of whether or not these sex slave women also say, and by the way, we should be paid the same, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's not like their duty to bring that up. Like it's
no, not every feminist has to bring up, not every feminist piece has to bring up every piece of feminism.
Some subtle things that are good about that movie and why I think it is a feminist movie, it might not be as feminist as a lot of people think it is, but first of all, that. Is it Tom Hardy? Yeah, Tom Hardy. Like, he doesn't talk a lot. Like,
mm-hmm.
I like that about it, because that's what annoys me about, like, male-centric movies that are, like, action movies. It's just like, shut the fuck up. Like, you're dumb.
Yeah.
And then, also, what's her name?
Charlize Theron?
Sorry that I'm swearing.
Zoe Kravitz?
Like, she's amazing, and then also the fact that they, like, you think there's going to be a romantic interest just because that's the way that we're trained to watch these types of movies, and then there's just not, and, like...
Yeah, that
so,
makes
so
sense.
So, just, like, some of these, like, subtle, like...
Like, it wasn't using women in a way that, like, movies normally...
The movie's subtle and not so subtle. They do a lot of things. Tom Hardy washes blood off of his hands with mother's milk. There's tons of little tiny things in it, and there's also tons of great big things in it. Not the least of which is having a major franchise, the male-centric franchise, be turned into... It's not even a male-centric franchise, I suppose. But something that men are extremely interested in, going to see it and having it be this female-centric movie about redemption and destroying the patriarchy with a big, huge phallic truck. It's beautiful and fantastic, not overrated. Most feminist movie of the year goes to Mad Max Fury Road. What's the most overrated movie of
the year? The main point I was trying to make about the feminist thing is that I feel like it was talked about like it was extremely feminist, and while I was watching it, I was waiting for something to happen where it would take like a stand on something, and I guess that just didn't happen. And I'm not like a woman.
Right. Well, as a woman... As our resident woman today, do you find yourself interested in, like, did you think of it? Because for me, I was like, wow, this is fantastic. There's probably, like, disgusting men in this theater who are, like, upset right now, grinding their teeth down.
But I think that sort of gets at my point about the movie, just real quickly. I think that it didn't do a bunch of misogynistic things. I think it, like, removed a bunch of elements of misogyny that might typically be in a movie like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it actively, like, built towards something else. That's my main point. And you can agree or disagree with it.
But also, that's confusing, because I'm like, wouldn't that kind of not be feminism? Because if you're trying to make them equal, do you have to, like take away one thing and then, like, add the other? Like, if it was, like, overly, like, about the women doing stuff, wouldn't that not be, like, equal? I don't know, a woman
on her own, at the end, stands on a rising tower, rising forth... Yeah. To run the what's left of the world.
Okay,
that's incredibly powerful and beautiful.
Maybe I just didn't soak
to
it in.
Me. What do you think?
Okay, first of all, don't ask me directly because I'm a female.
Oh, it's a joke.
You can all have valid feminist opinions and
perspectives. Yeah, but they can never be from any perspective of any worth, necessarily speaking.
I don't think that's true because this is a conversation we should have elsewhere.
It doesn't really mean anything to the most overrated movie of the year, but did you think
I love
it
that
was
movie. I thought it was a feminist movie. It made me feel very empowered. I loved it.
Okay,
there
we go.
I think it's overrated.
There we go.
So,
there we go.
So, what is it? The Big Short or the...
I think Anna-Lisa is the most overrated movie.
Okay. Sounds good. Derek. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, I think I'll go with Anomalies or Big Short. I both really hated both of those movies. I think also the fact that they've gotten like a lot of attention that I don't think they deserve. You know, it's not so bad if a movie sucks and like some people like it. I'm just like, oh, well, I just won't ever talk to them. all right, Anomalies. So I'm going to go Big Short.
Whoop. Three bags of popcorn.
Fuck the Big Short.
If you like the Big Short, please never talk to me.
And you should also listen to our last podcast.
That's not true, actually. A lot of humans that I like the Big Short.
Yes, absolutely. Like my grandparents. I happen to really like them.
All right,
let's move on.
I'm glad. I knew that I was going to be able to generate some controversy.
Oh, God.
Cool. So now on a little bit lighter note, let's talk about movies that maybe didn't get that much attention or that much critical praise, but we thought were really good. Kale, do you wanna read through those?
Here, I got them right
here. Oh, you don't have it up.
What?
He's our sound guy.
True. All right. The movies we have listed for most underrated are The Diary of a Teenage Girl, which I did not see. Chappie, which I did not see. Entertainment, which I did see. Clouds of Sils Maria. Crimson Peak, which I did not see. Krampus, which I wanted to see really badly, and I tried to multiple times, but it did not work out. The Walk, which doesn't even actually exist. The End of the Tour, and A Most Violent Year. And I would probably say for my picks for these ones,
mm-hmm.
are we gonna talk about them?
Let's talk about them first.
Okay.
Sam, I think you also Sam has some more details specifically about a few of them. Because
I'm sorry.
Stuff like Diary of a Teenage Girl probably like underperformed its expected gross, but I don't think anyone ever expected that to like go gangbusters. Same thing with something like Clouds of Sils Maria, but you actually dug in and looked up some numbers for some of these.
Yeah, I did. It doesn't necessarily.
Go ahead.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So like, I picked 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these, and I did have like the things in which I thought were overlooked about them, and also their production and budgets and their domestic gross, and
quite a few of these. Like, the end of the tour, I was surprised, only made $3 million domestically. Yeah, I thought that was really going to be a big movie. Yeah. I thought that was going to be nominated for, like, acting.
Or at least, like, mid-level indie money.
But it didn't even crack $5 million. I was surprised about that. The Walk had a production budget of $35 million and grossed $10 million,
which I've never heard of that movie. What? I don't know
that is. It was Philippe Petit, who crossed the World Trade Center on a tightrope.
Oh, that guy.
There was a movie with Joseph Gordon-Levitt about Philippe Petit, directed by Robert Zemeckis, who is obviously a big, huge smash maker of art.
Yeah.
Apparently this didn't work out for anybody involved.
Well, I think what happened is everyone was just like, oh, I saw Man on Wire.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's something that doesn't need to be improved upon, just like Joseph Gordon-Levitt's next movie where he's going to be Edward Snowden.
Why is Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing all these movies that are like, look at all these physical things I can do.
I don't know what he's up to.
He's riding a bike.
He's tightrope walking.
Looking at porn. He's tightrope walking.
Right. Did he direct on? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But Crimson Peak had a production budget of $55 million, domestic gross of $31 million, which is shockingly depressing because I think China especially loved Pacific Rim, his last movie, and I'm amazed that it made absolutely no money because it was so wonderful. And then the production design and the set decoration and the costume design, incredible in Crimson Peak. It's just absolutely wonderful. And I wrote down some of the people and the things that they've done, but that doesn't really matter. It's neither here nor there. Although it is interesting that the set designer and also, I think, both of the set designers worked on Spotlight too.
So that was funny. Totally different. That's so weird.
Isn't that weird?
Those movies look... Do you think they like siphoned money from the set design for Spotlight to like act like
maybe because
all of the sets in Crimson Peak were like so lush and dense.
Maybe they took
and Spotlight all the was out. Just like another room with white walls for this. okay, natural lighting, sure. Yeah,
I don't know.
Shelves.
And then another fun fact: the costume designer is going to work on Suicide Squad, and the production designer is working on Star Trek Beyond, which a lot of weird stuff going on there, I suppose. Krampus, I think, made back its budget, which was nice, but its sound editing was so unbelievably beautiful. It was like Oscar caliber sound in Krampus, and I can't believe nobody cared about that. And most finally, it's too goofy. It was too much fun. It was too much like Gremlins.
I don't think anyone knew, like, even me seeing the ads for that movie, I don't think anyone knew, like, is this movie actually like a spoof and a joke?
Yeah.
Or is it going to be like a real horror movie?
Yeah.
And I think people have trouble, at least with marketing, that isn't clear about that.
Yes.
Like, Cabin in the Woods, I think the marketing was like, this is a horror movie. It's just going to be scary. And then people got into the theater, saw it, and said, oh, that was also like a meta commentary on horror movies.
Sure. Which is like how movies should be delivered.
But Krampus, I was like, is this movie,
in general,
like, is this even going to be scary at all? Or is it going to be all a joke?
Right. I didn't know either.
But it might also be really scary. I don't know.
Yeah. It was really good.
Don't you think the people who are on the Oscars board or whatever probably just didn't see it?
I absolutely think that. And I also think that what you know, the behind the scenes of like the Oscars and award ceremonies like that are, you know, there's a lot of, what would you call it?
Campaigning.
There's a lot of campaigning behind the scenes. And I'm 100% sure the people who made Krampus, I think it's Lionsgate, they're probably not like, let's try to get sound for this. You know what I mean? There's no way. But I think also the most important one, to me anyway, or besides Crimson Peak, A Most Violent Year, which I think nobody cared about at all in the world, had a production budget of $20 million and a domestic gross of $5.7 million.
And that movie just should have come out, like, now.
It should have come out a year later. Because Oscar Isaac's big now.
Everyone loves Oscar Isaac, yeah.
Everybody loves... I mean, Jessica Chastain has a higher visibility, I suppose. Everyone in it is great. The production design is great. The acting is great. Everything about it was wonderful. And so, I don't know. But then also, what else is on here? Entertainment. Incredibly underrated.
Yeah.
That one's hard to talk about, like, its rating, because it just feels like a movie that wasn't going to get that big of a viewership.
Yeah, it won't ever.
But I was, like, I guess, disappointed that I didn't see, like, a little bit wider distribution to, like, indie theaters.
Yeah, it seemed to only be video on demand.
It'll probably be on Netflix, though, if the comedy is on there.
That's true.
I don't think the comedy is on there anymore.
Well, at least it was.
But I think I don't even know if it got a theatrical release.
Yeah.
Did it?
And it's such a nice looking movie that it's really worth seeing in the theater. But I guess maybe the thing with that is that I also didn't hear buzz about it from like most of my uppity movie sources.
Right.
Like, I wasn't seeing like people on Twitter talking about the movie. I wasn't seeing people on like
saw
message
Greg
boards.
Himself.
Yeah.
Like, I was in a movie.
Yeah.
He cared more about being an Ant-Man.
Yes. He really did. But
he
yeah.
cared more about talking about The Hobbit and shit than
yeah.
about the, promoting anything he does.
Actually. Yeah. A movie about his character that he's had for 20 years. It
yeah.
makes no sense. But
yeah.
Do you think that he was like disappointed in the movie, or do you just think that he didn't ever expect or want a ton of people to see
I
it?
Don't think he wants attention for things that he makes. I think he wants them to exist on their own.
Yeah.
So I did, he has like two interviews on YouTube for entertainment. One was on the Tom Green Show. And he's like, I don't really like talking about myself in a way where I am implicating that I am Neil Hamburger and these characters, you know what I mean? So I think, I just think he didn't want to talk about it at all.
Yeah.
But I probably wasn't going to get that big of a reception anyway.
No.
I think Crimson Peak, for me anyway, is something that should have been a huge movie that people cared about.
Yeah, let's run through a couple of these others real quick. Did you want to say something about Diary of a Teenage Girl, Maddie?
I just loved it, and I really don't know much about, like, the ratings or what the critics said about it, but all, like, from what I understand, you guys didn't really like it.
I didn't see it.
Okay, well...
It seems like a lot of
no
people
one that
didn't
I
see
talked
it.
To, like,
I didn't see it because when I saw, like, the poster for it and the trailer or whatever, I was just like, oh, it's just another indie movie. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, the poster's
you know
pretty
yeah.
bad for it.
I was like, oh, like, nice colors.
I know, the poster's kind of bad.
Yeah.
I don't know, I just loved it, and, like, almost for the same reasons that I love Greta Gerwig, which is another one that you guys don't like, but just,
like
talking about, like,
another podcast.
The importance of, like, female friendship and, like, solidarity and that kind of thing, and I don't know, and... I mean, as you know, I know some people who worked on the movie and people who were in the movie. That's not why I liked it. I, like, went in and tried to be really, like, objective. And I still just... It just made me feel things. It
yeah.
made me cry, like, several times.
It seems like the movie didn't get it... Like, it didn't... It doesn't seem like a movie that was gonna, like, go crazy. Like, America loves...
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems like a movie that didn't find its audience.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If in an alternate universe, people are just like, oh, yeah, like... Half of the, like, millennial or, like, late teens girls, you know, just, like, rave about Dire Teenage Girls, like, their favorite movie of the year. I would be like, oh, yeah, sure.
Here's a good comparison is Me and Earl and the Dinosaur.
Yeah, I was just
Girl.
About to say that.
Those
yeah.
are, to me, like, similar, but I think Dire Teenage Girl is so much better.
Me, it's
I
interesting.
So
I think it's the exact
like,
opposite.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, I kind of want to hear why.
Me and Earl and the Dinosaur Girl, to me, was, like, a movie that was an indie movie that was trying to not be an indie movie.
I really did not like that movie.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really have much to say about either of the films, I suppose.
Well, why did you like Me and Earl better?
I don't think... I think it would be boring to talk about. I guess I could talk about it.
It was cute.
I think The Diary of a Teenage Girl equates, like, burgeoning female sexuality with, like, depression and getting in over one's head and becoming...
Teenage-dom.
Yeah, but, like, also, like, spiraling out of control in this way. And it was, like, spiraled out of control so much so that it wasn't a controlled spin. It spun out into and crashed into a tree. It was like, took a very simple...
The plot
premise.
Or the characters?
The
or...
plot and the characters took a very simple idea of a young girl exploring her sexuality and slowly but surely spirals out of control into she's a homeless drug addict being... pimped out by another woman.
Holy
and
shit.
It's like,
that happens
what is
in that
even
movie?
Yeah,
I didn't see it.
It goes crazy. And I'm like, I wanted this insular story where I know
yeah.
a little bit more about
Kristen
Wiig.
I mean, she's also
Kristen
sexually
Wiig.
Abused. Like, it's not just like, she's having fun, like a 14-year-old having sex.
Right,
with
that's what I'm saying.
Like,
I think that's kind of like inappropriate. I just thought that it went extreme in a way where it could have been like, it could have been
resonant. It could have still gotten at some of the dangers that might have happened
yeah.
in that situation without, like...
I think it could have been resonant
so
with young girls,
okay.
and it's not, because no young girls are ever... so few young girls are taken advantage of in such a huge fashion that I feel like there's not much...
Yeah.
It wasn't relatable to anybody. People are like... I think at first they're like, oh, this is relatable, kind of. I can
yeah.
kind of see. And then they're like, oh my God, no. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Hmm.
And I don't know. I just didn't much care for that. And I feel like Me and Earl and the Dying Girl is a little bit more... more insular, a little smaller, and also about a somewhat important topic of like a boy and a girl having a friendship beyond anything romantic. in a way, and I think that it was like a better contained story. But that's rambling and boring, and it doesn't mean anything at all in the most underrated category. So I'll stop talking about it now. And I will say that A Crimson Peak is probably my pick
for most underrated.
That was another one that you liked. You liked that a lot.
I love Sam and Matt, you both like Clouds of Sils Maria.
So is Peter.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Who?
Peter.
A man people
don't. Our podcast world doesn't know about
Peter. We'll put Peter's the secret. He has a secret Twitter.
Oh my god. But yeah, I like the Clouds of Sils Maria. I don't know how
well it did. Shout out to you, Peter, if you're listening. Oh my god.
I don't know how well it did.
He's probably
grinning
with his headphones
in. I'm gonna eat a brunch. I think that I don't know how well it did critically, and I don't know how well it did in France, and I don't know how well it did in relation to the director's other pictures, so I don't really know if it's underrated, necessarily speaking. I don't think people that I talk to have liked it as much as I would like to. I don't know if that makes it underrated.
It's weird, because I feel like, in the little bubble that we're in, my impression is that everyone liked it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I actually did not like that movie. I won't really talk about why, because it's a very tricky movie in ways.
Yeah.
I feel like it would be very difficult to talk about briefly. But, it's hard to say, how that movie actually was received. But it does seem like it didn't at least get enough buzz, good or bad.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that movie was going to be, a big talking point for, whenever it came out in, the summer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought that, every Twilight fan was just like, I'm just going to see that movie.
Yeah.
What's your face in it? And...
Well, they never saw Camp X-Ray. Or whatever the crap.
The acting was all really good. We can say that for certain.
Yeah.
Julia Binoche is amazing.
All of them.
Real quickly, let's talk about Chappie too.
Is Chappie in here?
Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Chappie is what action movies would look like if I was the entertainment czar.
Mm-hmm.
If Obama called me up and was just hey, you can just watch every movie that's about to come out, and then just if you don't like it, we won't let Americans see it.
Yeah.
So it would just be you wanted to make White House Down? Sorry, you need to make Chappie.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
You have to make something that looks like Chappie. I mean, I feel like it was an action movie in a conventional enough way that,
conventional for an 80s movie, I feel like.
That, a lot of people who would want to see an action movie could like it. But it was also, pretty weird.
It would have it would go off on little adventures, the movie would.
I guess maybe what's disappointing about it isn't that, oodles and oodles of people didn't see it, but just I wish more snoots had been Chappie's tight.
Yeah, nobody Chappie's seemed cool. to no like nobody has its back at all.
But people seem to have that opinion about District 9.
Yeah, that's what's weird. Everyone kind of got behind District 9.
Yeah, yeah.
I liked District 9 more than Chappie. I did not like Chappie.
The movies had a very different aesthetic, I guess.
I just don't like the Die and Wood guys.
I love Ninja and Yolandi Visser, but the movie felt like a waste of my time.
Really?
Way too long.
I was
just like, what?
When we left, I think I was like, that seemed to go
me
by.
Me and Sam
in
were like,
minutes.
Really?
Yeah,
was
we
it
were
like
insanely excited. I don't know, every movie's 2 hours long.
You guys went to Target and you
basically
bought one of those,
don't you think?
Not really.
Robot dogs that have the light up ears.
Yeah, and that dance to music.
Yeah, Spice Girls or something.
I don't know how much it made or how much or like.
It made enough. I just looked it up.
Okay, it made enough. It made back its budget.
It doubled. Yeah.
Oh well,
oh,
okay,
okay,
then I'm
good.
Happy.
Good.
Yeah.
It deserved.
So I don't know if it should be.
I think critically and. I think in 10 years people will be talking about Chappie in a way that maybe that's something to think about too. Which one? No, well, we'll have to see in 10 years, won't we?
Yeah,
I think it's a movie that
Sam's gonna call you up in 9 years and 364 days, be like, so
look at all these people talking about Chappie. Just like I said, no, people will be talking about Chappie. I feel like in the future, I'm not necessarily sure if people will be talking about the end of the tour or whatever the crap.
All right, so let's give our picks for this category.
Crimson Peak.
Sam, you say Crimson Peak. I definitely see the rationale on that one. Although,
I see the merits of it.
At the same time, I kind of feel like Guillermo del Toro is just like, whatever, I made it.
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
And it's, I guess it's, even though it didn't make back its budget, it's $31 million isn't nothing. I think he's probably just happy that people saw it. If it had only made $15 million, he would be sad. But he's like, okay, I didn't make money on it, but I put all the money into making the thing that I wanted.
Yeah.
And a lot of people saw it.
I bet it's his worst performing movie since Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah,
I bet Pan's Labyrinth made even more.
But yeah, I see where you're coming from with that. It was a good movie. It was a really that movie had, like, enjoyed existing.
Yeah.
Like, some movies you watch and you're like, oh, wow, what a dreadful... But that movie was just like, yeah, I'm Crimson Peak. How are you?
Like, yeah. No, it was like
that movie would just like walk up to a stranger at a party and be really pleasant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right, Kale.
I would probably say entertainment because I feel like these people, like the Tim Heidecker, Greg Turrington squad, eventually get a lot of cred in like the like hip 20-somethings crowd. And I feel like for some reason this movie hasn't yet had that wave of happening because like I know it, more people have seen the comedy, but they just, like, don't even realize that entertainment, like, exists at all.
Yeah.
So I feel like once people catch wave of that, like, and all the hip people will be like, yeah, that was really good.
Did people watch the comedy until it got on Netflix? I feel like that...
I didn't even know about it until Netflix. And then I saw it, I just watched it on a whim because I was like, oh, I just love Tim Heidecker.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, that led to this. So I feel like...
Hopefully it has a future.
Yeah, eventually I think there would be a wave of people caring about it.
What do you think?
I was going to say entertainment, too, because whether or not Greg Turkington, like, tried to make it big and, like, wanted people to watch it, like, I want people to have watched it.
Yeah.
Like, every time I bring it up, I'm like, have you seen this? And, like, no, I mean, no one besides you guys, like, that I know has seen it.
Not even my friends who love Greg Turkington have seen it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And I also think it's a lot better than the comedy, like, in so many ways. It's also, like, way more beautiful.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's worth seeing. It's great.
Okay, two for two, two and two.
What about you, D?
Wait, oh, did you not pick Crimson Peak?
No, I'm actually going to say End of the Tour.
Oh, good lord.
And, like, I saw that movie, really liked it. I saw it a second time, and I was like, oh, maybe it wasn't that good.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I don't think it was perfectly executed, I do feel like it was pretty good. You don't think it was...
No, I agree. I agree with what you said.
I do think it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
We probably don't need to say more about it than that. And, okay, the one thing I will say is that a lot of movies today have this difficult task of trying to navigate their authors. So, like, oh, this movie is told based on the book by sort of like the... So, like, the Stanford Prison Experiment. Uh-huh. It's based on a book by the guy who conducted this, like, unethical experiment. So the whole movie has this cloud over it where it has to reckon with the fact that, like, it's told from the perspective of the bad guy.
Yeah.
So it, like, really goes out of its way to villainize him. End of the Tour, more gracefully than almost any movie I've ever seen, navigated that situation of, like, yeah, the narrator is this person who's kind of, like, an opportunist.
Yeah.
This person who maybe doesn't have the best interests of everyone else at heart. And I thought it actually integrated that stuff into the movie in a way that was graceful and actually added something.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's underrated.
Interesting. Cool. Okay.
Cool. Let's just zip through this one real quick. Best world building. We're kind of synthesizing.
This is one I want to talk about for like a year and
okay.
a half.
Let's zip through this one real quick and then loop back to the beginning and zip through it again much more slowly.
Okay, perfect.
Here, I'll introduce them.
Yeah.
So best world building, we have a lot for this. Mad Max, Sicario, Hard to Be a God, which I don't even know what that is. The Revenant, Crimson Peak, Macbeth, Chappie, Z for Zachariah, It Follows, Tangerine, Ex Machina, and Clouds of Sils Maria, which I just added. That was fast, sorry.
I don't know exactly if we have like a hold on what best world building
let's talk about what it is.
How about you try to define it?
Well, I don't know. What I would say best world building is you take a set of blocks, building blocks or some such thing, and you arrange them in such a way to
they
that
look like a drum set, and then you
no, you take a bunch of little Lego pieces or whatever. That's a deep cut. You take a bunch of little Lego pieces, and then you build something that seems believable and whole, and that
or like a vivid or particular.
Yes, if a camera's walking through it, you feel like you're walking through.
I guess
it's not like if you turned around, there would be a set, and you would see a man with like a lighting rig.
Real quickly, what are some movies that you think do world building really well? Not necessarily from this year, just like all time.
Well,
like,
I think we would say
the same
Star
Wars universe.
Oh my god, I wanted to say it at the same time.
You can edit that out, and then what are some movies that you think do world building?
Okay, how about we do it on the count of three? One, two, three.
Star Wars.
Oh well, you didn't do it.
Wait, how about this? How about this?
Yes.
You can compare it to like, maybe like, Toy Story.
Okay.
I feel like it's kind of a good example because, like, the world in that sense is, like, this kid's house.
Yeah.
Like, the room. And then, like, they kind of are like, oh, the outside world, that's crazy. And the idea that the outside world is, like, mysterious. And you get, like, a sense of, like, how innocent the characters are because they're in this
world. Well, and then, like, the neighbor's toys, they're, like, weird, like, amalgamations. That, to me, ignited this, like, sense of possibility in the world.
Like, they are in a room, and outside of the room, there's also stuff, and they have to deal with it. I thought that was a good... And then, like, a bad example would be, like... the, like, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or some shit. Because that, like, makes no sense. You know what I mean?
It just doesn't feel like
a world. It's just really cartoony, and you're just like, okay, this doesn't, like, whatever's happening in the movie is forced to happen. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, Toy Story, it feels like something could, like, something weird could just happen.
Yeah, it feels like the world is alive, and, like,
yeah.
if the camera just, like, turned 90 degrees and went that way, you feel like there would be stuff there.
Yeah, right. You could, like, make a whole other movie just by, like, mistakenly not following the characters.
Absolutely. That's what Star Wars is, perfectly. Yes. It's a totally lived-in world. You go into a cantina, and you're like, all of these characters are interesting. Can we follow each one of these characters, please?
Yeah. Whereas, like, in the Big Short, if you left, you would just watch a guy, like, buying stuff.
Yeah.
Although, I feel like it can be... Oh, I don't think it has to be, like, a fantasy or sci-fi type thing. I think, theoretically, you could do a really good job of world building in just, like, our world. And I'm trying to think of a movie that does that really well. Maybe do you?
Well, I could respond to that also, but I was just going to say, I think, like, an important part of this is that it engages you. And like, maybe what I didn't like about Chappie, now that I think about it, is that I was like, oh, God, this movie is still going on. But, like, I didn't think it did a very good job. Whereas, like, Mad Max, like, it just, like, went by quickly because I was just, like...
But don't you feel the world...
I, like, just experienced a different... It's like a dream. Like, you experience a different thing, and then you wake up, and it's like you didn't feel like any time passed.
Don't you feel the world in Chappie is kind of, like, entertaining and interesting? And that if you turned down a different... corridor of the world, there would be something else interesting happening.
The sets that they have are vivid, but kind of by necessity, that movie is restricted to, like, a small three-dimensional space.
Yeah.
Like, the world of that movie is... The best world building that movie does, I think, is very early on. You actually went to the bathroom during this part.
I go to the bathroom once.
When Chappie first woke up, and there was, like, this weird mix of, like, dilapidated concrete, but then also, like... primary colors and, like, childlike stuff imagery mixed together.
Okay.
But I don't know, like, if Chappie just, like, ran out of that warehouse and, like, got on a plane to America, I don't know what that movie would look like.
Yeah.
If Chappie even went to a nice part of town, you know, like, whereas Elysium, same director, is a far worse movie.
It does have
we
a
did
more
get to
world.
See, like, different environments in the same world.
Sure.
So, yeah, I guess I'm sort of receptive to your argument about Chappie, that, like, while certain parts of the world were rendered really vividly, I didn't know what else there was. Like, it felt in some ways like wooden buildings, like, propped up in a Western.
Okay, sure. Blade Runner is another good example.
Blade Runner has great world building.
Well, I'm gonna look at this list.
You liked Hard to Be a God a lot.
I think Hard to Be a God and Z for Zachariah, beyond Mad Max, which is obviously my pick for it, just because I love it so much that I could kiss it on its face. But I think that, and Tangerine, Z for Zachariah.
Tangerine might be a good example of a movie that exists basically in our world.
Yes.
Yeah.
But still does a good job of world building, because what it does is it evokes this, like, network of social relationships and this specific geography. Like, I guess the fact that the donut shop is so vivid in that movie, you feel like they could go into any of these little, small-time little shops and there'd be some person with a personality there, not just, like, a wooden, like...
Well, and it's not... It's not L.A.-y either. Like, it's very back streets. They pick, like, just the most beautiful streets in Tangerine.
Even in the beginning, when they go to, like, that one place that has the arcade game, you're like, wow, they just went to this random person playing this arcade game, but he's, like, incorporated immediately. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
That makes, yeah.
It's really, it's beautiful. Yeah. But Hard to Be a God, which I guess I shouldn't talk about that much because you've seen it, but you didn't care for it.
My brother, like, owns it, and I want to borrow it.
It's incredible. It's on Netflix, I think.
Oh,
it is on Netflix.
Okay.
But if your brother has it on physical format, I think the subtitles on Netflix are weird.
Okay.
And I think that contributed at least somewhat to me not liking it that much. Why don't you briefly say what's good about it in terms of world building?
In terms of world building, I think that it's, like, it has an insane amount of detail.
Yes.
It's so lush in like a very disgusting, filthy way.
Every shot is like packed, just like really dense with stuff.
Yes. It's like the whole camera will be, it'll be a huge room filled with a bunch of stuff, and there's stuff in the foreground, there's stuff in the background, there are chickens being passed from person to person right in front of the camera, hands like right outside, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's so much, you can't focus on it all. Your mind can't focus on it. It kind of reminds me of Playtime or something like that, where there's just like so much your mind can't focus. It's so overwhelming, and in that regard, it's kind of like Mad Max, I guess, where to take in everything requires multiple viewings. But I think that Hard to Be a God seems like somewhat out of place today. It seems more like a 60s Polish movie or something. Like, so much detail, so excessive in this like grimy, repulsive way. And I thought that was just unbelievably beautiful. I didn't think for a moment that any of it was a set. It seemed like you went to another planet, were dumped out in this weird, horrible village, and it was there. You know what I mean? And see, for Zachariah, it's kind of like that too, where you don't think like, oh, that cabin was just built there for this movie. Oh no, that cabin's been there for forever. Not forever, but for decades.
What Z for Zachariah does really good on this front is it's only in the movie for like what, 2 minutes, but this like little radiation suit that Chiwetel Ejiofor's character wears just like looks really particular.
Yeah,
they didn't just like pick a generic radiation suit. They like designed like what would a radiation suit in the future look like? And I was just like, oh, that's what it would look like.
Mm.
That's like, you see that suit and you immediately know a little bit more about the whole world.
Mm.
So Zachariah, I feel like it didn't have like real big expansive gestures towards the world, but there were little things that I was like, oh, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you guys see Z for Zachariah?
No.
Okay.
Are there any of these other ones that you guys wanted to talk about? I mean, The Revenant, that world was okay,
The whole movie was about that, so, like...
Yeah, yeah, I would say that it scores well on, like, the atmospheric type stuff.
Yeah. It's just, like, the world exists, it's very big, and it hates you, and this is how you...
Yeah, it's mostly outside, but yeah. Jack Fisk, his production design on The Revenant is, like, unbelievable in terms of, the mountain of skulls and like the fortress that they go into. You almost don't even think about it, like you're not like, this is a set at
which
all.
I think is almost a fault of the movie, like that mountain of skulls is like one of the most evocative images of the movie, and like heaven forbid they could like actually tie it into the plot in a concrete way. it just exists at this little set piece that they cut to like twice for 3 seconds, which kind of pisses me off.
But what would it have meant in the movie?
I don't know anything. I think it gets flattened a little bit as a symbol and as like a set piece simply because it's not concrete and doesn't mean anything in the story.
Okay.
Do you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying. What do you guys think? Any other ones? Macbeth? Anything?
I liked Macbeth.
No.
For a world?
Well, what do you guys think?
I mean, I didn't see Macbeth or Sicario.
No, about any of them. Like,
oh,
do you guys
Tangerine
have like a...
is like, I'm like set on that. That's
okay,
like,
I would say Clouds of Sils Maria is good for this because you start off on a train, you're like, whoa, what's going on? And then you get somewhere and then you go other places.
You're
there's
right,
a hotel,
yeah.
There's like a bunch of shit and it feels really realistic and like it takes a long time to get places.
Yeah.
And like, it seems like the movie is like real time. Like, she has like 2 cell phones and shit.
Yeah, that part really excited me at the beginning because I was oh, this is a real thing. Like this is a real job.
People
and
have to deal with that.
And it was real time, but it also, like, spanned a lot of time. Like, the actual movie itself, like, was probably, I don't know, like, at least a year or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, by the end of it, you're like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, I just, like, stepped into this world
and even
I don't know why, how it does that.
And, like, even at the end when they're doing, like, the play and stuff, the fact that they have to, like, move around and you can, like, see the different parts of the, like, what's on stage, you're like, wow, you're always, like, really aware of, like, spatially what's happening.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's interesting that you bring that up because you do feel like you get a sense of, like, where everything is. Like, you could draw a map from, like, here's the hotel, and then you go up this winding road, and you take a left here. Like, you could theoretically draw pretty much
accurately
exactly where everything is in the world without being told where everything is. It's not like an Indiana Jones where there's the map and you're flying around.
They like use the car.
Yeah.
Like, wow, it feels like you could actually just get in the car and go somewhere.
Yeah.
In some ways, it feels like a really good video game in that respect. Where that's like you have this, it's like not an action game or like a mechanics game. It's more like a point and click game. And when you get access to the car, you're like, oh, I'm going to get to go to like a new environment.
Yeah. Absolutely. I guess I didn't really think about that at the time, but now that you mention it,
it felt very big.
Yeah.
And the fact that they like went on a walk and then like fell asleep.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow, they're still there.
Yeah.
They fell asleep. That's crazy.
Yeah. And then like a goat, there's just happens to be a goat, and you're like, of course there's goats here.
Yeah.
This goat would, you know what I mean? Like it's just like a thing just walks into frame for a second and leaves, and it's like, well, of course it would, because there are goats here.
It's not like, oh, why? How is there a goat?
Yeah, and
so
it's
that's
also...
another. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No,
I was just
going
to say that's another example, like we used Tangerine earlier, of an example of like building a world within our world. Like like you can imagine that this exists in our world, which is like maybe why it is so convincing. Like it's a lot different than Star Wars. I mean, maybe I think that like that's Tangerine and Clouds of Sils Maria are just the best at world building because of that reason, and that like it's like extremely hard to build a world like Mad Max. Like you don't really feel like you're there. It's just like
it's like
oh, this was impressive, like because they used like awesome special effects. Whereas Clouds of Sils Maria, like it takes like a special sort of skill to make you feel, I think
they're just two totally different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you have a realistic sense of space and world building, and then you have a completely fantastic sense of world building. And they're two totally different things. They're doing different modes of interpretation. One is a world you know you could be in. One is a world you know you can't be in. So... I don't know.
But I think Mad Max does a good job with like some of the costumes of really minor characters you see at like the Citadel To me, that conjures like, oh, why is that guy wearing that and that guy wearing that? That must signify something like in their society.
Yes.
So I do. I'll stick up for Mad Max a little bit on the world building.
No, of course. I love
after
like,
I
sci-fi
shit on it.
No. I agree completely. I think it's interesting to like look at a character and everything that they have on them has been thought of, and there's a reason why it exists in that form.
Or even like, even if that's not true specifically from like an authorial perspective, it still functions that way when you're watching it.
Yes.
Even if it was just like, oh, I'm going to put a feather here.
Right.
Maybe there's not really an explanation for that, but, like, anyone watching the movie is going to be like, oh, why is there a feather there?
Well, it's just like Star
Wars.
There
must be a reason.
It's just like Star Wars where Obi-Wan Kenobi has a, in the first Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Has, like, his hood on, and everyone then is like, oh, that's how Jedi's always dress.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
No, he's just a man hiding.
Yeah.
And of course you would wear a hood because you're in a dirt dust planet. Yeah. You're going
to
wear a hood. You know what I mean? But then
Shout
it becomes
Tatooine.
Like... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It becomes part of like the fabric of the very movie. Like, oh, that's how this person would dress.
Yeah.
But not necessarily that. It's just like, okay, functionally for this planet, how would a person dress? Do you know what I mean? So that's kind of interesting. I suppose it's true.
Okay, so you like, Maddie, you like Tangerine?
Yeah, but actually, I think I'm going to change it to Clouds of Sils Maria.
Okay. Kale?
I would give it to Clouds of Sils Maria, too.
Nice.
What's the list I took? I'm kind of forgotten. Forgotten where I
scroll down.
Oh, my God. Scrolling. I would say Hard to Be a God or... Oh, my gosh. Do I have to play...
I'm going
to
go with one we didn't talk about that much, Macbeth. And like you were saying, how it's admirable when a movie can create a world within our world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's cool that they really evoked like some kind of world different than what I normally picture Shakespeare.
Okay.
They gave everyone these weird haircuts that I now want very badly. there was just like a lot of light that was weird colors. I don't know. I was sort of transported to like a certain kind of world that they wouldn't ever have had to make. Like you can just make a Shakespeare play with good actors and like put a camera and look at them and someone's gonna go see that, but it totally took that and tried to create something new as well, which I thought was really cool. I don't know, I won't talk too much about it, but
that's very true. I'm gonna say Hard to Be a God
looks really cool.
Hard to Be a God,
all right,
because it's a totally different planet.
completely.
So that brings us to our two biggest awards.
Oh my gosh. Of,
right? We have the Matthew McConaughey McConaissance Award, mm-hmm. just for someone who just all year went hard.
Yeah. In at least three movies.
Yeah, really just like turned in several good performances. Mm-hmm. You know, someone who probably like positioned themselves well for the future.
Yes.
Like, oh yeah, now this person's gonna get calls for every, you know, whatever movie.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to read through the nominees for this?
I can do that. Okay. So John Cusack in Love and Mercy, Chirac.
Okay, yeah, the next minute.
No.
Oh, God.
He's so great in all of these films. In fact, he's
Wait, you didn't even read them all.
I'm going to speak at my own pace.
John
he's great Cusack. In Love and Mercy. He's great as Brian Wilson. In Chirac. He's great. He's like the best character in the whole movie is Father Mike Corridon. And then in Maps of the Stars, he's great as Dr. Stanford Weiss. I think he's wonderful in all of these roles, in different forms, but still a little sedate. So I don't know if he will win for me personally. But he's great in all these films, and I think they're totally different pictures, completely. I think he brings something to each of them. And then Donald Gleason in Ex Machina, he's Caleb. And then he's Jim in Brooklyn. And then he's General Hux in Star Wars Episode... What is it? Episode 7?
Why do we let you read these?
I'm sorry! And then Andrew Henry in The Revenant, which, by the way, is a real person. Andrew Henry was the Rocky Mountain Fur Company. He owned it.
Whoa.
And lived a full, long life. So, just a fun fact for you. And then Oscar Isaac in Most Violent Year. And then Ex Machina as Nathan. And then Poe Dameron, of course, in Star Wars Episode 7. The Force Awakens. Alicia Vikander, Ava in Ex Machina. Gabby Teller in The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I don't think anyone saw, but she was very good in that too. And then in The Danish Girl, which she's great in The Danish Girl. She's better than Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl to me. Then there's Tom Hardy in Mad Max as Max. And then Legend, which I never saw. Did anyone see
Legend?
No
one saw it.
No. Mm-hmm.
And then he's also incredible in The Revenant.
Really good in
just
The Revenant.
Just amazing in The Revenant. And then Matthias Schoenhartz in Far From the Madding Crowd, which I think is an underrated movie. Probably should have been in the underrated movie category. Mm. I think it's one of the best of the year. Danish Girl and A Little Chaos, which was also very good. Does anyone have anything to, like, which one sticks out to you the most? I think, for me anyway, I think Donald Gleason in four of the biggest and best movies of the year is pretty shocking, doing different things in each of them, doing an Irishman in Brooklyn, doing a straight-backed general of space, you know, and being a somewhat presentable, respectful general in The Revenant, and then being a lanky, nerdy American man in Ex Machina. That's pretty shocking, impressive, and you wouldn't really remember it's him in all those movies, I feel like if you watch The Revenant and you watch Brooklyn, you're not like, oh look, it's Donald Gleason.
His accent slipped a little bit in The Revenant a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but his face is so good.
He did
good.
An admirable
It was
job.
Bad in Star Wars too, in my opinion.
No, I think he was doing what's his name? From A New Hope.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He was doing the general in A
Grand
New
Moff
Hope.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, he was doing Grandma Tarkin.
Grandma
Tarkin.
Lily.
Well, whatever.
Tarkin
was bad.
I think he was doing like a bit a riff.
I mean,
but it's, I agree with you, and I like, I think he just I was surprised to see him in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Because it was so different than Ex Machina.
Yeah.
And Brooklyn, I guess.
Did you see Brooklyn?
So it was. Actually, I didn't.
Okay.
I was like,
did you see Brooklyn?
Mm-mm.
Who cares?
It's great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, she falls in love. She falls in love with someone else. Woo.
Yeah, yeah. Love is a very boring thing, I suppose, and should never be in any art at all. You're absolutely right in that sentiment. But, what do you think? What
forget art in life. No love, period.
That is very true.
I think he just showed that
I like my love in art, not life.
He can be an eclectic actor.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's kind of found a rhythm, too.
Mm.
Like, he was in all this stuff. Like, he was in France. Hank. He was in what was some other stuff he was in the past few years?
He was in that where his father plays the priest.
Calvary.
Calvary.
He's in all these things where he has to play like an outsider.
Yeah.
And now I feel like he's
the Angelina
getting
Jolie
integrated
movie.
Into movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you.
That's okay. I was just going to kind of transition and say that I think Oscar Isaac did like a similar thing where it was kind of eclectic. He was
In A Most Violent Year.
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac was like such a bad guy, but a sexy bad guy in Ex Machina. Mm-hmm. I love him in the movie so much.
His performance is incredible.
But then Star Wars again, I couldn't even recognize him because he was like this like all good character.
Yeah,
like all
yeah.
of a sudden I was...
Plus he was like kind of like nerdy in like an innocent way in Star Wars.
Yeah, he was so cute.
Like, really different,
yeah.
So I think they both did a really good job.
And a total different body type. I don't mean to like put too much... worth on changing your body for a picture. Like, I don't think that's terribly interesting. But he looks totally different in Ex Machina. Totally different build than he does in A Most Violent Year and Star Wars. It's pretty incredible. I'd like to know which one was produced at which time. And, like, what the fluctuation of his, like, build was throughout that period. Because it must be hard.
I mean, his performance in Ex Machina, I think, is... Earlier I was talking about like actors who are like physically present.
Yeah.
Like he was just there. Like all the scenes he was in, like he could be like lifting weights or like washing a plate. And it was interesting. You're like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah.
That to me just like takes, it's like a special like elite level of acting.
Yes.
Where just like your every move is somehow fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And to me it's like he's just it. Like he's the choice for this one. Like Oscar Isaac had a great year.
Yeah.
He really elevated himself. Like he had been a favorite of all these, you know, like hot directors. And like I saw Inside Llewyn Davis and I was like, I don't get it. Like what does everyone see in this guy?
Yeah.
But finally this year I was like, oh, Oscar Isaac, I get it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Here he is.
Yeah. I agree. He's my pick too. He's incredible. Incredible in all these movies. I would like to point out how well cast, and I meant to look it up and I didn't look it up, I feel silly now. I want to know who cast Star Wars and who cast Ex Machina, because Donald Gleeson and Oscar Isaac in both of those,
like,
and then
out.
Yeah, but then Alicia Vikander, another person who had an incredible year, was also in Ex Machina.
Yeah, whoever cast Ex Machina should be getting kickbacks from like all three of those actors.
Yes, I mean, whoever cast Ex Machina is the best casting person in Hollywood or wherever the person is.
Impromptu award, best casting director.
Whoever did Ex Machina is incredible. Incredible, incredible, incredible.
I would agree with you guys about what's his butt.
Oscar?
Yeah.
Oscar Isaac?
He's a good guy.
What about you?
I love Oscar.
So
seems
that's,
like
that's
he'd be a fun
too?
Guy to hang out with,
okay.
too.
He seems
like
he'd be a hoot.
I think I'm biased, though. I don't know.
That's okay.
He's so
cool. All right, so that brings us to the final, the wrap-up, the big one.
Oh boy.
Last. Mm-hmm. Everyone just sprint what movie they're like.
What's the best movie of the year?
For me?
I guess you can sort of interpret that however you please.
I would say that Mad Max Fury Road is my favorite movie of the year because I think... it does everything that I like in a movie. I have such like an affection for B-movies, 70s and 80s movies, sort of like outrageous adventure. And all of those movies, all those 80s, 70s movies that I like are very oppressive towards women. They have a lot of sexual assault, a lot of like misery directed to women. This is like the exact opposite of that. It takes everything that I like about the 80s and everything I like about now and puts it together in this beautiful, colorful, insane, funny universe that is practical effects for the most part. It's edited in such a beautiful way where everything that matters is in the middle of the frame. All the production design, from the map that they use to all of their clothing, everything is so beautiful, everyone is so fleshed out.
It does have a real, like, kinetic energy to it, too.
It has an insane energy.
Sometimes movies, you watch them and you're like, yeah, I mean, thinking about it, I take apart the movie and like this piece did its job.
Yeah.
It was really good. This piece did its job. It was really good. Et cetera, et cetera. You put them all together and it's just like, I don't know, the movie didn't get me.
Yeah.
The movie didn't really like suck me in.
Yeah.
Or it didn't, you know, like it, I don't know.
Yeah. And this is like a
Mad
lightning,
Max was kind of
lightning in a bottle excitement.
Yeah, immediately you're kind of in.
But I also feel like it does something that not many movies at all do, where if you saw it on television, you would be like, oh, that scene's coming up, let's watch it. You don't have to, it's not like a cohesive whole entirely. You could jump in at any moment in time and enjoy yourself. And I think that's a quality that I also appreciate in the film. I just like everything about it. So, yeah.
It would be hard to overstate how much you like this movie and how much you've talked about it this year. You really...
I really do like it.
I think you'd be talking about this movie for years.
I do think that it's a movie that everyone should talk about for years if you like practical effects, if you like kinetic energy, and if you like George Miller, I guess. I don't know. What do you think?
I guess my favorite movie of the year is Entertainment.
Okay.
I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
But, oddly enough, this, like... pressure of like picking a movie to like crown for the year, that movie feels a little too marginal to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm picking one that like I feel like I can recommend to more than just like people who are very, very similar to me, mm-hmm. I think Carol. I really liked Carol.
Okay, interesting.
I thought it was a really well-made movie.
Yeah.
I thought it looked good.
Yeah.
One thing that I would say to maybe defend it against a naysayer like Maddie,
hey.
is that there were a lot of really subtle things that were so smart in that movie.
Yeah.
So the only one that I can think of right now is Therese is at this party. Yeah. And she is like separated from Carol. I don't think that's going to be too much of a spoiler. And she just feels out of place. Like you see all these like heterosexual pairings happening at the party. And then the party's winding down. There's like kind of sad music playing. She just feels out of place. She leaves the party. She goes to walk somewhere on this snowy street, and you're just like, oh, poor girl all alone in winter. We've all felt like that at some point. And walking the other way from her, just in the camera for just a minute, is a black couple. And you just go like, oh, there's two people who couldn't be at that party in, like, 1940 either.
Yeah, yeah. I did notice
that. So even though that didn't, it wasn't, like, foregrounded in the movie wasn't about that, I feel like all over it had these little nods to things like that, where it's just like, by the way, here's a story we're not even telling, but, like, in the way we foreground it for just, like, a split second, it almost goes back to the world building thing, but I think more this movie didn't feel that much like a world building because in a way it felt very much like a scripted, staged thing where it was just like, okay, now you guys, and they just walk forward at the perfect moment. Oh, now this is just in the frame for like a second.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Everything about how that movie was framed, how different pieces moved in front of the camera, they never like wowed you in a way that you're like, whoa, look at that. But if you're really alert, I think you can find a lot of things to look at in that movie at any given point of time mm-hmm. that are going to enrich your viewing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I really like Carol.
Okay. That's good.
Okay. So I'm going to say Entertainment also. All right. It's like, that's what I'm going to go for. It was like, it's the movie that I keep referencing in my head as like the one that I felt most viscerally about, like in any way. Like, it made me feel things. It was like surprising, like at almost every turn. Like the scene where the person is like giving birth in a bathroom.
Yeah, you know,
like,
that scene like, really stays in your memory.
But like that, yeah, just like these moments that I have in like where he's doing the farting noises
yes.
and gets kicked out. Like, just like, oh my God, it's so funny and so dark. And I love it. And I think everyone should see it. It's beautiful.
Woo.
But I also have a couple other things to say.
Yeah.
One that we didn't mention at all is Love in 3D, which mm-hmm. I just want to give like an honorable mention to. Because
did that make all of our top 10 lists?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, you have so many on yours. But it's just, I love Love in 3D because it's actual sex, and I love anything that talks explicitly about sex. I thought it was a great sex-positive movie. And then, oh yeah, okay, and sorry, I just want to say, Tangerine is probably my second favorite movie because... if you compare it to The Danish Girl, which was a, like, big-budget movie, Tangerine, to me, does a much better job at just, like, dealing with transgender issues, like, in general.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
It's not that, like, a movie has to if it's, like, about, like, transgender people, but The Danish Girl was, like, so just explicitly, like, okay, old people, here's what it's all about. Like, we're gonna tell it to you straight. Like, this is what transgender people are. Like, they're people, too. Whereas Tangerine was just like, this isn't really a, like, this is a movie about transgender people, but it's not like about like,
they were
really
allowed
the
to
issues.
Be people.
They were just fucking people.
Yeah.
Right. The and Danish like, Girl is an explanation of transgendered things.
Which I
and
think
then
is an important.
Tangerine starts
yeah.
from the idea that you already know that they're people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. So, and it was just such a really interesting, like, niche like area, like the just transgender prostitutes in LA. Like that's just like an interesting thing to learn about.
That's gonna be a movie that like I hope just stays on Netflix for a long time, and then just like over the course of like 50 years, just like. People are just digging, like, I want to get more into movies. And then people just, like, find that movie. And just, for, like, for every... Like, it never gets this thing where, like, there's this sort of, like, vertical, like, recommendation of it. Just, like, I want everyone to, like, dig up that movie like their own little gem. And they find it and they're like, oh, what's going on here? In some ways, it's... I don't want to say it's a puzzle, but it definitely has... it feels like it, like, opens, like, a flower or something. Like, it has, like, a secret inside or something.
So, yeah, that's it.
I just want to say Love in 3D is great.
Yeah,
and that's like something that we probably should have talked about at all
during this. Well, because it's not really overrated or underrated. It didn't really come up in any...
No, I guess it didn't really. It just did what it did.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's a great movie. Yeah, it's a good movie that does certain things really well.
And it's really entertaining.
Yeah, and so it's just fantastic. Go ahead.
It's also a movie that if if someone was like, I hate that, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
Sorry.
Did we talk about it? We talked about it.
We had a whole podcast.
That's right.
Oh, okay. Really? Go ahead. Well, then there we go.
I feel like I like these movies that came out this year, but I don't feel super strongly about any of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that the three that I liked the most,
mm-hmm.
Mad Max being one, is just fun.
Yeah.
We already said everything I feel like we could say about it almost. Entertainment, I feel like it was a movie that's hard to describe, and it's interesting to see a character who you don't fully understand go through situations you don't fully understand, and like I thought about it for a while after that. And then the third, I must say that I liked watching a lot, even though it's not that interesting, is Spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, I forgot that I was watching a movie sometimes. Mm. I never had any issues with how it was filmed, how it was, like, how it was doling out information. I was just like, wow, I would tell a lot of people to go see that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I think that movie was kind of a masterclass in terms of, like,
yeah.
This is how you dispense information in the course of a narrative.
Yeah. It was organized.
And without just being like, okay, audience, time to learn.
Like The Big Short.
Oh my God. You learn
things while the characters were learning things, and it felt natural.
Yeah.
And also, I have to say, when it ended, I was like, oh.
I know.
I was upset when it ended. I cared about all these people.
I was excited for the characters to do more. I was like, yes.
Yeah.
But also, I felt walking out of the theater, for me at least, like, it was kind of a heavy movie. I was like, ooh.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what? One of my favorite moments in that movie is when 9/11 happens. And they're just like, oh, all right, I guess we got to push back this story because 9/11 just happened.
Yeah.
And it's just like, whoa, like, this is the world that we live in.
Yeah.
This is, like, real stuff. And, like, these people are just normal people. Like, it was just so humanizing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it wasn't dramatic or anything. It just happened.
The movie's not trying to make them out to be, like, these wonderful, beautiful people.
Yeah.
They're actually kind of terrible people in a couple of ways. And that's, like, one of the ways in which the movie tells you this is, like, they're so involved and invested in this one story that even the most obscene things happen around them and they don't seem to care at all.
Yeah.
Or they're frustrated that they happen.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, how does everything not revolve around the things that I'm doing?
And it's just their job. Like, they're just doing their job, like, really well. Like,
yes.
They're just good professionals.
I think they're just handling their situation as, like, anybody would.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
anyway, well,
all right.
I love it.
That's the Oscars.
If you're still listening after what has surely our longest podcast to date, thanks so much. Tell your friends if you like it. You can find us on all the usual places on the internet. I don't think you need me to tell you
what the URL is.
Yeah. Just ask Jeeves. tune in next time.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.